Up next, we're going to talk about multi-dimensions, an amazing story. James Gordon Graham with us, and we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our Twitter poll, by the way, do you believe that there's an ongoing covert chemicals program affecting our skies and weather? Out of a number of votes, 55% said yes, 34% no, 11% uncertain. Let me tell you about our special guest tonight. James Gordon Graham is an entrepreneur, former CEO of a software company, which helped to create the early internet. And after floating his company on the stock market in the dot-com era, he traveled the world seeking answers to life's big mysteries. And his new online course, Hidden Knowledge of the Elite, he has integrated the insights that he gained of the multi-dimensions to provide some answers as to how the elite really operate and how we can collectively grow our consciousness for a positive future. James Gordon Graham on Coast to Coast. Hello, James. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Thank you very much for having me on.
And I believe we're going live to you in the United Kingdom. Is that where you are?
Yeah, it's a bit early in the morning, but I understand you're kind of late at night at the moment across there.
We're getting a little crackle on your phone, James, so we may end up calling you back, okay?
Okay, fine, no
so
problem.
We'll continue chatting for now. Now, tell me a little bit about your software company.
Well, we started it in the early 90s, and it was a very exciting time. I don't know if you remember it. It was all the startups were happening. Amazon was losing £1 million a month and so on, and Google had just started up, and artificial intelligence in its very early days was starting. And across in Europe, the software companies were very different. We were actually using American equipment all the time. I'd had 10 years in an American software house prior to that, so I was able to understand the way the Americans actually operated, and that gave me the ability to start my own company up. And it was quite incredible. The World Wide Web was just sort of coming out, and WWW was created by Tim Berners-Lee, and he was the first one to put things in a browser. And at that time in the early 90s, everybody was starting to buy personal computers. I don't know if you remember it yourself.
Oh, sure. I sure do. I mean, I didn't even know what they were like, James. I didn't know what they were for.
Yeah.
That's how early it was.
So in 1991, the World Wide Web was kind of like put out across the world. And what we did was we, 3 years later, we actually made it a lot more complex in the sense of making it three-tiered. You could do a lot more with it. And we built the first artificial intelligence database built into the internet in the world. And from that point, we developed a number of products. It was quite an amazing concept. You could just use English language instead of coding, and you could actually streamline your workflows in the company and then take it through to being more productive. And what eventually happened was the City of London heard about what we were doing, and we were offered the opportunity to list on the stock markets. It was the dot-com era. Do you remember that?
It was big. As fast as it went up, it also came down.
Yeah, I had that as well. It's quite amazing, actually. It just seems to be driven with a lot of greed. I don't know if you found out on your side of the pond, but in 1999, 2000, it was coming to an end. We were actually the last company to list on the stock markets in the dot-com era. And we had an amazingly robust product, which had proven itself. But a lot of the companies at the time were like websites, really. There was nothing behind them.
Right.
And a lot of them went bust. So what happened was that I was working so hard, George, at the time. And when you start up companies and things, you probably know yourself, you start enterprises up.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work, a lot of stress. And what I found at the time, though, because we had a very powerful piece of software, the only people with the money to buy it were those who were making weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, it sounds kind of like bizarre, but I went through a very kind of hard learning curve where I thought, why is nobody buying this amazing product? And then eventually I found the only people with money in the UK were those contractors and those companies who were building submarines.
That's right. They had the contracts for all that, didn't they?
Yeah. And so we in 1996, what happened, I was doing a presentation to this shipyard and submarine manufacturer, and I just got really kind of stressed, and it was one of those sort of defining moments in my life where I said, do you know, there's got to be more to life than this. And I think a lot of people probably reach this point in their lives where they, you know, they're so stressed at work, and you know, they work so hard to, you know, bring the money back to the family. And for me, it started a path, a new path, which took me really basically from, oh, there must be something wrong with me, my body. You know, I've got to go through the healing. I've got to go through, you know, understanding why I'm so tired all the time, why I'm so stressed all the time. And what actually happened was I went through like three main areas, as I call them. And the first was the, I've got to get my body right. You know, that's all I knew at the time. This is 1996. Then I went into the emotional side of things. And finally, that led me through to the multidimensional, you could call it more spiritual, but I don't like using that word because it's got so many kind of connotations. And as I went through those different areas, I became more psychic, I suppose, or multidimensional.
Well, you probably already were, but you probably magnified it.
Yeah, it's true, George. I think you know, a lot of people are born, you know, with this ability. And the sad thing is about our education system is that so many people are knocked out of their natural psychic abilities. And, you know, through fear, you know, sometimes the parents fear that somebody is, you know, like, hearing voices or seeing things in the multi-dimensions, that they'll get ridiculed at school, you know, they'll get bullied and hurt. So the parents almost police their own children to knock it out of them. And, so I think you're right. I think, we, you know, we're all born with that ability. And some perhaps have it more in different areas than others, but we all have it, you know, so it's all inherent in us.
When we talk about the new elite, what are we talking about?
Okay. I've been looking at this for a very long time, and I met some of the, you know, so-called elites when I went and took my company on the stock markets. And but really, you know, over the years, I've talked to so many people. And when you talk to people generally, they think, oh, the elites are, you know, those 1% with the money. They think that the ruling families, the black nobility,
right,
the banking corporations.
The George Soroses out there, those kinds of people. Those George Soros and people like that.
That's it, yeah. Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Warburg, Lazards, you know. Other people think it's governments, you know, UN, NATO, IMF. Some people think it's the ones who kind of head up the corporations, you know, like BlackRock and Vanguard and Fidelity and so on. They you know, they actually own and run, you know, Coke and Microsoft and Pfizer and AT&T and General Motors and Boeing. And, you know, there's a lot of people have a view of what the elites are. And when you go into the sort of conspiracy world more, you find that they talk about, like, the Crown Corporation, the Holy Roman Empire, the Jesuits, the New Venice, you know, which is the city of London. And they talk about this Crown Corporation being like the Vatican, London, and the District of Columbia, you know, in the United States. And, you know, they then have these secret societies, the Knights of Malta, Trilateral Commission, you know, all these different kind of areas. So depending on who you look at, they look at the elite. But what I'm talking about, in some ways, with the new elite, is that for thousands of years, first of all, there's been a structure where the elites have fitted into. And, you know, if you take humanity, you know, humanity is you know, have you come across the reincarnation principles, George?
Oh, my gosh, yes. We've dealt with that a lot here, James.
You see, if you consider, when I do talks around the world, I often ask audiences, and I say, you know, NASA's found a billion Earths within our sort of area of the galaxy. You know, do you think that there's life out there? And, of course, everyone puts their hand up. You know, 96% of the audience always knows in the heart that, you know, we are, with people, and there's various civilizations out there where we're in contact with. But then if you bring into the mix reincarnation, it gets very interesting, because one lifetime you could be the elite. You could be one of these people in positions of power. And another lifetime you could be actually receiving the downstream benefits or negatives of what the elite do to you. And for me, it was a case of, well, what does it mean to really reincarnate like this? And what does it mean to my life? And what's the real meaning behind what we're doing here on the planet? If we're all incarnating in different roles in every lifetime, what's the purpose?
Mm-hmm.
So what I've come up with is ultimately a new theory or a new hypothesis on evolution. And this came from a really big insight I had, George. It was an incredible experience I had.
Was it like an epiphany for you?
Sorry, say it again?
Was it like an epiphany for you?
It absolutely was, George. Yeah, I actually managed to go into a very deep meditative state, and I actually saw the human soul.
You saw the human soul?
Yeah.
What did it look like?
Well, I've got actual pictures of it, and I've actually, because of my background with graphics and computers, I've been able to put together a very clear example of what it looks like. And I could do it with a lot of people. I found a technique, an understanding of how to actually go through my heart and connect. You have to have permission from the person you're doing it with, because it's very deep. You have to go very, very deep with them. And it looks like a liquid mirror, almost like mercury, but it's like light mercury. It's all forms of light, beautiful silver kind of mercury. And on the outside of it, it's got these beautiful colored lights, like laser lights, which are moving. And they're kind of like connecting with you, these lights. And
a person, James, who might not be living the kind of life that they should, maybe they're evil.
Yeah.
Would you see a different look in that soul?
Yes, you would, actually. The soul itself has, because it's got the emotional light body around it, and they are colored, the most amazing colors, you can actually see, it's almost like I was intuitively seeing their actual light body in emotions. That's the big thing, George, emotions. And the emotional light is around the soul. And so this was the big thing for me, the big epiphany, as you say. It was an understanding that suddenly we actually, as humans, we're incarnating for a reason. And our soul comes down, it attaches to a body, then it learns these life lessons through emotions, and then it grows our consciousness. By becoming conscious of your emotions, you are growing your soul, you're growing your consciousness.
Did you know about this when you were your CEO of your software
Absolutely
company?
Absolutely not.
No way.
No idea whatsoever. And it took me many, I've been traveling the world for 22 years now. I resigned just before 9/11 in 2001. And I went through a process of getting my body right, and then learning the emotional work. It was so important to do that. And then I opened, to the dimensions from doing that work.
Now, when we deal with multi-dimensions,
yeah,
what have you uncovered about that?
Well, there's a number of layers and a number of areas. And the first one is that I managed to get hold of some, I don't know if you know this guy called Harry Oldfield. He's got a device in the UK where he designed it many years ago, actually, but he's a classic case of he literally had the men in black, the black ops people, come to his door, and they knocked on his door and said, we're going to take this device.
Is it an anti-gravity device?
No, it wasn't anti-gravity. It was a device that could actually photograph your photograph faster than the speed of light. So in other words, we have an aura, we have emotions. I've talked about the soul a little bit there. He's designed a device which allows you to, and it's based on Tesla technology, by the way, you know, Tesla coil technology, and it allows you to see your aura and see, he's actually, because past, present, and future are always kind of on top of each other, he's actually got photographs of the block where in England they used to execute people in London, the Tower of London.
Oh, geez.
You actually see the block, and it's not been there for like, you know, like, I don't know, hundreds of years. And for me, it's a device which kind of like hooks into your consciousness. This is why the mainstream scientific world just ridicule it, because you can't go through double-blind experiments and peer-reviewed papers and stuff like that with it, because everybody uses it.
It's a device into the supernatural.
Yeah, you get a different result depending on your consciousness. So at the time, what was happening was I was looking at healing, and I took the device over to Michael O'Doherty. Now, he's a guy, he's quite famous now across the world, because he healed Michael Flatley. Do you remember Michael Flatley?
I sure do, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, what happened was he healed him. People forget he lost the use of his legs for 2 years. You know, this amazingly talented person. And Michael O'Doherty healed him. And I was across in Ireland. He's an Irish guy. And I was having a healing with him. And I took this PIP camera, as it's called, from Harry Oldfield, polycontrast interface photography. And what I did was you could actually put it up in a kind of movie camera, you know, in a video camera. And he was doing a healing on me. And, you know, when healers heal you, you don't really know what they're doing. But we captured it, and we could see the aura and the emotions moving in the room all around us. And suddenly there's this flash of light, and the whole room went white, and then it went back again, and what I've got from that is that was the first time ever we've captured an emotion collapsing into light with a camera, a real photon camera. It actually uses Tesla technology. And that's a multidimensional, you know, to answer your question about the multidimensions, that's actually a multidimensional thing. It's that ability to see what's really going on around us that we don't normally see. And this camera captures it, but it captures the consciousness of the people in the room at that particular time.
What an invention.
Sorry?
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. And, you know, he's had to keep it very quiet over the years, because he literally had the Men in Black come around to his house and, you know, Official Secrets Act, we want you to design this for a military purpose. You know, the usual thing. And he refused. He just said, get out of my house, you know. And he's kept a very low profile over the years. But that was one of the very important things, which it made me understand, you know, that emotions are so, so critical. And if we are evolving ourselves from understanding and becoming coherent and conscious of what we're doing emotionally with people, then it makes sense why we incarnate.
Hold on for a second, James. We're going to take a break, but we'll come back and talk more about these multi-dimensions. And welcome back to Coast to Coast with James Gordon Graham, our guest. James, this device that your friend had mentioned, what does it look like? Can you kind of describe it for us?
Well, you use a standard camera or video camera, and what it does is it captures the photons that interfere with the physical object, or the photons of effectively your consciousness, your auric body, or your thoughts or your emotions. And it's effectively a piece of software combined with some hardware. So he designed it originally with a Tesla coil and crystals. But then he actually took some of the... Do you remember the old Curlian photography?
Yes, stuff? for auras.
Yeah, that was it. Well, he actually got a blueprint. He found it just out of the blue. And he designed one of those Curlian photography devices. But then he took it to a new level. He actually used Tesla technology on top of that. And it just brought it into a whole new kind of ballpark. And, you know, we were talking about multi-dimensions and, you know, it can actually, you know, depending on who uses it, you will see whatever your consciousness is kind of seeing at the time, which, of course, the scientific world will never accept because they need hard evidence and it works the same every time sort of thing. And you go through the peer-reviewed papers and double-blind experiments and so on. But this device could never be accepted by the scientific world because it can't do that. Everybody who uses it in consciousness will get a different result. And so when I used it, I was filming Michael O'Doherty healing me, and suddenly this amazing flash of light happened. And that was an emotion collapsing into light. That's the most important thing, you know, that you can imagine, because it's showing the process by which we grow in consciousness and the process by which we heal as well.
Now, if I were standing and you took a photograph of me with this device, what could it show?
Well, I've seen many different results. If you're in a grave, he's got some great pictures, this guy, of people in graveyards, and he can actually see entities, you know, real, you know, kind of like ghost-like entities
floating around. Yeah.
Yeah, but one interesting one was this sort of pyramid at the back of the actual graveyard, and it was a sort of mausoleum type thing, and you could, you know, see it very plainly. He showed it to somebody because that wasn't there anymore. And this guy said, "Yes, I remember that, you know, from photos 100 years ago. You know, that was there 100 years ago." So, you know, it was taking pictures of things that didn't exist anymore.
Well, that's amazing. Did it scare him when he started getting these pictures or shock him?
I think it was a case of... surprise. You know, he went to places like Stonehenge in England, you know, the big sort of ritualistic sites.
Sure.
And got some amazing pictures there of the energy that's coming off these stones. It's just absolutely incredible.
And he made this device specifically to look at these structures and people?
Well, I think he was trying to do a lot of healing work, and his idea was to...
he wanted to look at the energy from people, didn't he?
Yeah, he has the view, which I absolutely share, which is if you want to heal, you heal first of all your auric body, your emotional body, and then the physical follows. And he was in that world and has been in that world for all his life, actually. So I think he started trying to heal, but really... What actually came out of it was quite remarkable, that you suddenly these photographs started to appear of things he wasn't expecting, and it is quite remarkable.
And let's talk a little bit more, James, about the souls that you see, because this fascinates me. Are they in different colors, or, you know, when you said they've got that mercury type glow, I'm thinking of the Arnold Schwarzenegger Predator movies, where you could see this almost like this glowing object that you know is there, but you really can't see it.
Right. I don't watch those movies very much. I'm not really sure what you're talking about, but it looked like liquid mercury or a liquid mirror, and the heart of it did anyway. And what was interesting was with different people, that there was a different... a slightly different size and sort of shape. And it was almost like I was sort of in this sort of, you know, body of sort of in it rather than looking at it, if you can understand that. And it's almost like people have an emotional body around them, which is moving, which is light. And, you know, it's one woman, I know from her personality, she was very spiky. You know, she always used to sort of cut into conversation and be very rude and stuff like that. And
that happens.
I could actually see it in her light body was coming out at me, spiking me, like she was actually, you know, like that in real life sort of thing. And also, it occurred to me that, you know, people must come from different sort of species, almost like different planetary species. And they, you could see in their light body that, you know, it was almost like you were looking at different forms of beings that were from different places. That's only the way I can explain it, really.
What does that tell you about the other side, about life, the fact that these cameras can show it, that you see the souls? What does this tell you that you didn't know before?
The key thing, George, that I've come up with after all these years is that we are evolving in consciousness. We do adapt to our environment. There's no doubt that as humans, the Darwinian type thing kind of works, but it's not really survival of the fittest. What we're really doing is we are evolving in consciousness. And when I saw the soul, and then you link that to reincarnation, and you know, you then look at the world as it is at the moment, and you say, okay, look, there is only love. You know, a lot of people use that word, you know, and they don't really use it properly, in my view. You know, in consciousness, everything is just consciousness, and that in itself is love. And then you say, well, somebody says, well, hang on a minute, you know, all these wars and atrocities that are going on all the time, how is that love? You know, tell me how that is love. That's horrible what's going on here. It's very difficult sometimes to live on this planet. But if you take the context of it, that we're reincarnating all the time, so sometimes you could be one of the elite. And the other thing to bring in at this point is the gods. I had experience with moving my consciousness, not in the sense of seeing a UFO. I've seen many UFOs, and you know, I understand that world of UFOs and aliens and sort of interdimensional beings. But there's another type of interdimensional being, and that's the type that is interacting with humanity all the time. There's thousands of these things around the planet. Some of them are benevolent and helpful for humans. You know, they're like the elementals and so on. But there's a group of beings which are not nice, and they interact with humanity.
True. Would you call them demons?
Well, some people do, but for me, you know, I've seen some of them, and you know, they're highly sophisticated things. These, you know, I saw one once. It was kind of like standing up, and it had like the head of a lion, and it looked at me. And I thought, oh yeah, I'm a goner, you know.
Yeah, really.
I sort of looked at. And I did something really strange, actually. It was like I was on the sort of plains of Africa looking at a real lion. I thought, oh, you know, I'm out of here in 3 seconds, you know. And so I just roared at it. It just came out of nowhere. And this thing looked frightened. And I thought, my God, you know, these things have got emotions. And it turned around to, it was like a female lion. It was standing upright with like a human body. And she had, you know, like Sekhmet in the Egyptian, you know, stuff. It was looked like her, and they did this telepathy between them, like instantly, and then it just everything just went blank. You know, they just got rid of me. But
state of mind were you in when you saw this?
Well, I get these visions in a hypnagogic state, so between sleep and awake.
All right, you could be in bed, you could be in a chair, something,
you know,
like that.
Absolutely, in bed or in a chair. And it's like you sort of shift your consciousness through an angle, and you then, you know, and it just, I can't do it like, right, I'm going to do this. You know, I can't, you know, like, it just happens, you know, at certain times. It doesn't happen very often to me, you know, but it certainly happens. And what's important to understand about this is that these beings are interacting with humanity, and, you know, they are taking energy sources from humanity. I've actually seen it. You know, I saw one once. I was outside Chatsworth House. It's a very, very big, what would you call it? It's the most amazing energetic site in the world, almost, in terms of like the old pagan kind of world of England. And you know, these people were kind of next to royalty, and they took over the they always take over all the sort of esoteric special sites and keep them for themselves, these sort of top elite. And anyway, I was there, and I actually saw this thing kind of latch onto me, and sort of I could see the energy moving between me and it. And I thought, oh God, that's how they do it, you know. I'm sure there's many ways of doing it, but it's like emotional energy. It's like light energy, which I was seeing with the soul. And they kind of like, and so I concluded that when you watch things like Game of Thrones and these very violent TV programs and so on, your emotional body is getting kind of revved up to such an extent where these beings can literally just start to take your energy. It's actually quite incredible.
We call them like psychic vampires.
Yeah, I mean, you could call them that. But, you know, you've been in UFOs, you know, and stuff like that. I know I've seen your Ancient Alien mm-hmm. and stuff like that, George. And, you know, the difference between the UFO world and this world is massive. You know, the UFO world, you know, my partner is very psychic, and she was taken up into a UFO once, and she was just driving along, and suddenly, boom, you know, she was up in this spacecraft, and they were, you know, looking at her, and she could see they were doing experiments on children and whatever.
One-time abduction for her?
It was an abduction, yeah. Sorry, what did you say?
Just one time? Or numerous?
I can't remember how many times it's happened to her, but she's very psychic. Amazing woman. You know, she used to be a medical doctor, and she moved into the field of... she's got a whole new theory of how the universe works, which she was given through these visions. And it's all about black holes, and it's understanding that black holes are creative. They're not these sucking monsters that everybody talks about.
They're pathways, aren't they?
Sorry?
Are they pathways?
What they are is that, you know that we see them at the center of every galaxy, and they've measured the light that comes off them, and what they're basically saying is they can see X-rays and gamma rays, but you know that in terms of our spectrum is about as far as we can get to with our science today. But there's a lot more light that comes out of them that you can't see. They're actually super bright light. They're not black at all, actually. And you get these bipolar jets coming out. And what they do is they come to our what's called the perception horizon, and they split into the positron and electron. So they split into antimatter and matter. So we have our frozen light world, which is effectively just part of consciousness. But it's kind of more like, you know, deeply heavy frozen light, but it cycles back all the time. And this is the boundary where you're really going to understand where free energy comes from. And it's understanding this type of physics, black hole physics, that the future will be designed in all sorts of different technologies. And I've not gone there yet, because my view is that we have to get the emotions right. We have to get it such that people don't come knocking on your door. And you know, since 2014 in America, there's been 5,000 inventions taken under the Secrecy Act from patent officers. You know, the U.S. government takes 500 million pages of documents every year and confiscates them.
What do they do with them? Bury them? Like
with a... Sorry?
What do they do? Bury them so nobody can use them?
Yeah, they're called black op shelves. They just shelve them. And, you know, this guy with his camera, you know, had it done to him, but look at it, he got through that. But what's happening is that until we can emotionally change so that we accept these devices and not just confiscate them and use them for war, which is really what's happening. You know, people call it defense, you know, like DARPA and so on. But
sure.
It's war machines they're trying to create, not defense machines. And they, you know, they're very, very concerned if you have free energy, anti-gravity, and so on, that, you know, somebody else could have it and use it as a weapon against you. So they confiscate these things under the Official Secrets Act. Excuse me. So anyway, this whole black hole world is the core of where this new technology will come from in the future. And she's called Dr. Mangia Samantha Lawton. Her book is called Punk Science. And, you know, people, I don't know if you know Bruce Lipton. Do you know?
Oh, Lou, I know Bruce very well.
Well, he said it's one of the top five books he's ever read in his life.
Excellent. And, well, and, get her on our show, huh?
Yeah, I'd love to get her on your show. You know, she really, you know, can tell you so much. It's unbelievable. And she's had these experiences with you being abducted, and she's had...
Yeah, we'll do that. Just send Lisa, our executive producer that you talked with earlier, as we set you up, James, some information. We're going to come back and talk more about your work in these other dimensions, and we'll take phone calls in our final hour next on Coast to Coast AM.